The crack is back, ladies and gentlemen. How are you all doing? It is a sweltering day in Dublin. We're breaking all kinds of records in terms of temperature. Our brilliant audio producer, Oscar Losef, is also struggling over there in London. Their shit has gone crazy too. It is difficult to live in this climate. Like, I know our Americans will have their AC. We don't have any of that. I had to do a lot of things today to get some fans. You know, I went to many shops. One of the shops had a man standing outside just saying, listen, we don't have any fans. He was stuck. That was his job for the day. Stand outside the shop and tell all the sweaty gentlemen who are rushing up with high expectations that no, we don't have any of that in stock. So yeah, it's a heat wave. We're not used to it. We're used to rain and misery here. And sunshine, light, and celebration is not something we do well, but we're going to get used to it. What are we going to talk about on the show today, Petey? That's probably how I should have started this, crackheads. I'm very sorry. Well, we're going to talk about Matchroom Talent Agency because they've got themselves a new recruit in Ian Machado-Gary. Ian Machado-Gary, of course, is about to fight for the welterweight title of the world against Islam Makhachev in Philadelphia. It is a massive fight, a huge moment for Ian Machado-Gary. So we must wonder, is this a good decision? We'll look at Tom Aspinall, how things have gone with him and Eddie Hearn. And just kind of think about, like, why would you do this if you're Ian Machado-Gary? Yeah, we're gonna get through that all. There is a lot more than that to speak of course. We have a new version of Josh Hockett emerged during the week on the Ariel Helwani show. That's led to lots of conversations. The great Chuck Mendenhall has wrote an article about it, and we will be talking to him about that. And there was also Dustin Poirier's arrest. Ben Folks has wrote about that. He is, of course, on this show today. We have lots to get into. Oh, yes, and the rankings, the meta rankings. I need someone to explain to me what is happening here, okay? The first time I went on, Navajo Sterling was the light heavyweight champion. And I'm sure they were just getting all the things together from that. And, you know, Kevin Borges was the champion of his weight division. It was very confusing. I need someone to explain it to me. Hopefully, one of the smarter hosts of this show, Chuck or Ben, will be able to do that. But before all of that, that's right, we've got a message from our good friends over at Kalshi. This episode is sponsored by Kalshi, the largest prediction market in the United States. Here's what makes Kalshi different. You are not playing against a house. Kalshi is peer-to-peer trading. You buy yes or no contracts on whether something will happen, and you're trading directly against other users. Think of it like buying or selling a stock. The line isn't set by some algorithm working against you. Public opinion sets the price. Kalshi is CFCT approved, federally regulated, which is why it's available all across the country, including California and Texas. Download the Kalshi app and use code CRAIC, C-R-A-I-C, to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi, trade what's next. Thank you very much to our lovely friends over at Kalshi. And speaking about lovely friends, let's bring them in. Ah, there they are. Woo! It is a sweaty motherfucker in Blanchard Sound, boys. I'm not going to lie to you.
Have you had heat waves there before? Have you had heat waves?
This is the first one.
In Ireland?
I think this is the first one. I mean,
because this seems like a lack of preparation by a lot of people, yeah. You know, over there. This doesn't seem like you.
It's not. This reminds me of being in, like, when I've had to go to work trips to Las Vegas or to the Middle East. This is the only thing I can really compare this to. You've seen my skin in real life. You know that I cannot, this is not going to go well. So, it's not going well. And yeah, last night I stayed up to watch, tried to just watch all the World Cups. I was like, I'm not going to be able to sleep. Not going to be able to sleep with all this, you know? Eventually passed out at like 3:30. Woke up at 5:30 then. And then I was just like, well, now I'm awake. Let's just wait for the stores to open so I can procure some fans and help Elaine and my little dog, Reggie. Reggie's, if I'm bad, Reggie is the worst. This is a struggle for him. But,
you know, in a way, I kind of relate because Montana also does not get that hot typically, at least until recently. And so a lot of people do not have air conditioning. My house doesn't have air conditioning. I do have, though, is a basement where it always stays much cooler in the basement. And so we have the advantage of super hot day. Everybody drag a mattress down into the basement. You could sleep down there. It's a little bit of a refuge. I just enjoyed the story you were telling beforehand about you going to buy the last two fans, and then it sounds to me like a clerk at a store really did you dirty, because somebody came up afterwards and was just like, hey, I'm here for fans. And he could have just said that they didn't have any. And instead, he pointed you out and said, that guy just bought the last two. He could have put you in a mob violence kind of situation if it gets hot enough and people are outraged enough. And he didn't have to do that, Pete.
He didn't. And he
didn't
was,
have to.
He was pathetic. And he was a small man. And the man who was being told that I was the winner of the last two fans, as I see it, the winner. He looked like he could kill everyone in the room. That was the problem there. And I was holding two large boxes where I was like, he could just end my life. One shot here and I'm out. I'm gone for a long time, you know? I'm tubes through the face and I'm saying, I did this to save my dog and my missus from the heat wave, which probably will be over by the time I get out of hospital in this alternate reality. But yeah, the guy called me a dirt bird.
A dirt bird.
Yeah. It means, well, has a couple of meanings. In the UK, it would mean something different than Ireland. A dirt bird would be something that you would say to, you know, it's a derogatory term you'd use for a woman in the UK. Whereas in Ireland, it's just a derogatory term for everyone. It's like you are a person of low moral substance. You know, you are...
Which feels unfair. That's unfair
is
in this situation.
You're a filthy...
Two fans. I mean, one fan and leave a fan.
Fans, I think, is the maximum number of fans you can buy in a situation like that. I'll say that. It's like if you had walked out of there with four fans, I'd be like, all right, that's dirt bird.
We don't even
behavior.
Have four people. We don't even have four people here. That would be crazy.
You're just buying extras in
I'd
case.
I'd be like, that.
Know.
That is at least dirt bird adjacent, even though it's a term I just learned here this morning. But two fans is like, that's acceptable. Yeah. That guy came to buy some fans. You just beat him to it. It's the luck of the draw, my friend. There's no reason to be out here calling people strange names.
It's hot here too, guys. Don't mistake
you
it.
Have
East
air,
Coast
you
gets
have,
hot. But here's the thing, though. We have air conditioning. I'm comfortable in here right now.
Hey, hey, it's
easy.
Like, you know.
And I have a bunch of fans.
Oh my god.
You know,
I have one fan. I'm not going to lie to you. Where it's directed at is not my upper body.
Oh, now you're going
to
be modest.
But the less said, the better. It's just, you know, I figure.
Speaking of people who didn't have to say what they said, you know?
It's an audio. Me and Oscar Losef and Jordan, On Air Jordan, discussed this beforehand. And we were like, if the fan is pointed at the upper level, it's going to interfere with the mic. So there's only one option.
Fair enough.
And that's.
We need a fan.
We're
cam.
Like 5 minutes.
Little fan cam.
5 minutes. Into this
okay. I hope you're well. We talk about some MMA. We'll talk about some MMA. As I said at the top, Ian Machado Gary, the latest signee from the UFC, who has joined with the Matchroom talent agency, and I believe we have some video. Let me just see because the. You know, I've got it all up. Like, we've added things to the list today that aren't on the list, and it's all over the place. Roll one of the clips there pertaining to Ian Gary, please, Jordan.
Signing has nothing to do with the UFC. It has nothing to do with my job inside that octagon. It has everything to do with outside of the octagon. I want Eddie and Matchroom Talent Agency to do as much as they physically possibly can to get the most amount of attention on my name as physically possible. Ariel, I'm about to fight the biggest fight of my life. I'm about to fight for a world title against the number one pound for pound fighter on the globe. And MMA is still, it's the fastest growing sport in the world, but it's still a niche sport. I believe that Eddie can help me build my brand outside so I can have more eyes in the octagon. So that more people know about Ian Machado Gary. So that more people know and more people watch and more people see what I do come August 15th. So all of this is tactical. All of this is calculated and all of this is planned. Much like my fighting, my friend. And it is all to bring the most amount of attention to my name possible so that the fights can be as big as I possibly can make them.
Well, look, I think these are great points that Ian is making. one thing that Eddie Hearn has a proven track record in is marketing to the UK and Ireland. He has just procured Crow Park for this Katie Taylor last dance situation, which seemed utterly impossible a few years ago. He has great media ties in Ireland. He has done many events here. He has promoted many Irish fighters here. The one thing that Ian Garry is lacking is that love from home. Like he came out, has been an unbelievable fighter in the UFC. I think he is fantastic. And he's right up to this title shot now. And still, it's very rare to see him in a mainstream media spot in Ireland. It's very rare that you can see vocal support behind him. So for those reasons, I think that this is a good move. This could serve a purpose for Ian. However, on the other side of that, my opinion is it made more sense for Tom Aspinall to go with Eddie Hearn than it does for Ian Garry, because Tom was in a situation, and we're going off a timeline from around the Cyril Gane fight. When we were looking at things, the way Dana White was speaking about him, it just felt off. He was acting as though Tom could have continued fighting there. I personally went to Manchester, saw the man undergo eye operations. I know that was not the case. But linking up with Eddie kind of made a sense from that point of view, and I think it's a good partnership there. What I questioned when I heard that Ian had signed is, the UFC have given you a lot of opportunities. They have put their promotional weight behind you. Like, you were in a very good place with the powers that be at the UFC. Why would you now go and sign with Dana White's biggest verbal sparring partner? Now, this could all work out fantastically. I think more than in the Tom situation, Eddie and Ian have gone out of the way to say, like, this has nothing to do with the UFC. They've both underlined that in their comments. But, Chuck, is there part of you going, like, why is Ian chose to do this at this time when he's about to fight for the welterweight title?
Well, the timing is still on his side because they've already booked his UFC 330 title fight, right? Like, if this had happened before that was done, especially with the kind of contenders that are waiting in the wings in that division, maybe we would be having a little bit different of discussion. But, like, he is saying that it has nothing to do with the UFC. It's hard for me to imagine, honestly, how it could from his perspective, because, like you just mentioned, I feel like if the UFC can put Ian into advantageous positions, they've kind of done that for him. Like, he's at least gotten the chance, right? Like, he's been a guy who's held his own in terms of, like, he doesn't say no to fights. Like, he's fought some guys that other people don't want to fight, but I feel like the UFC has been on his side. So if there was some kind of, like, subtweet to this, like in the Aspinall case, it's hard for me to imagine it from the Ian side. I could have fully imagined it, obviously, from the Eddie side, even if they're saying, like, I have nothing to do with the actual negotiations with the UFC. That still falls to the other side of his management. I have to believe, I mean, if you're taking this on good faith, that this really is about, because you've said this for years, that there's not a big presence in Ireland. In fact, he felt a little bit like he, you know, exiled himself from that country when he, you know, went to Brazil and all this. Maybe this is him saying, like, hey, I need somebody to put me back in the good graces of my homeland, right? Like, to me, that seems like, if you're taking this at all face value, that's what this feels like to me. Because I don't know Eddie's track record in terms of his connections. Like, you seem to indicate he has very good ones, ultimately, in terms of just management skill, right? Not just promotion, but management skill. So if that's the case, to me, that makes some sense, right? Mm-hmm. And that would have to be how that plays into the conflicts with the UFC and Eddie Hearn, we will see. But to me, I can honestly see why Ian would want to do this.
Ben, let me know your thoughts on Ian Garry. Did it make sense when you saw this news, or what was your reaction?
Yeah, I think Chuck's right to point out that timing-wise, once you have already been booked into that title fight, you're probably a little less concerned that, hey, if I signal that I'm linking up with Dana White's newest enemy, maybe they won't be in any hurry to put me in any great spots. To me, what this kind of underlines is fighters realizing the UFC isn't these days doing a whole lot extra to help you out promotionally, to help you out hyping you, any specific fighter. They're not. They'll do it when your fight comes around, especially if it's a title fight, the week of the fight. Then they'll throw some shine on you. They'll highlight you a little bit. But the UFC does not really see itself in the business of promoting specific fighters too much these days. The UFC is decided it's way more profitable and makes much more sense to promote the UFC as a brand. And then if you could help that out as an individual fighter, great. But they're not really looking out for you. They're not really trying to push you. And so I think that this sort of reflects Ian Machado Gary realizing, like, hey, here's somebody who says, I want to be in the Ian Machado Gary business. I want to help you. I want to get people looking at and talking about you, and maybe I even have some ways we're going to go about that. And so it makes sense for him to be like, okay, let's figure out how we're actually working on this brand and not just how I can serve the UFC brand. Now, obviously, the big question is going to be, can you win this title fight? And if you don't, will anybody be in a hurry to book you in another one? Because as Chuck alluded to, there's a lot of other options right now in the division.
Yeah. And it does seem like the heavyweight situation is up in the air. Tom Aspinall, he's started a new podcast, and he put out a tweet yesterday promoting the podcast, and you should all go and check it out. Him and Charlie have done fantastic stuff on this. The message is clear here. Back in full training for the Cyril Gane fight. I'm currently in talks with the UFC. The rest is to plug the inner game. You can go over to his YouTube page and watch that now. It's going to be a 12-part kind of season of this podcast, and they hope to do it in the future, but really, really good stuff. Make sure you check it out. But that's the most important thing from our point of view is Tom Aspinall is ready and he wants to fight. However, we had Dana White just last week, and he's kind of saying, like, oh yeah, we're going to have to see what's happening there. And you're like, well, okay. And then we have Mr. Hokut, who we will discuss later on. I mentioned Chuck Mendenhall's column at the start. Here's what Hokut said with a view to the heavyweight title picture.
Will you fight for the belt in 2026?
There's a great chance.
Wow. That is wild.
If Aspinall is not ready to come back, then I'm ready to fight Cyril Gane. And I like that matchup as well. It'll be a fight of like the best athletes, you know, that the heavyweight's ever seen. And I think I'm more athletic than him. I saw him play basketball. I see how the way he moves. He is. I see even in his golf swing. It's just like he's a master of movement. But I still believe I'll go down as the greatest athlete to ever step into the octagon. I'm talking about all around athlete as well. I'll beat him. I mean, if you had a variety of sports, I would beat him at.
So here's the thing that this has me thinking about, and I'm a bit worried about it in a sense that, like, Tom and Cyril is the fight that we need to see.
Yeah.
This is the fight the heavyweight division needs to see. I think we all agree on that. Especially after Pereira, they injected him into the situation and Gans got rid of him. Controversial finish or not. The fear is that, based on what Dana says and based on what Hokut says, is that this is a game of one-upmanship now between Eddie and Dana. And if he can just move on and slide Eddie further by putting Tom Aspinall behind the eight ball, a guy who says he's ready to fight, a guy who is the undisputed champion of the world, is he petty enough to do that then?
Well, yeah, we've seen that. That can't be the thing that you're hoping will save you if you're Tom Aspinall. You can't be betting everything on Dana would never do that to me. Because that's not a winning hand, man. It is crazy, though, because I can absolutely see a scenario where the UFC just declares, Tom's taken too long, stripped of the title, Cyril Gane promoted to undisputed champion. That's very easy for me to picture based on how we've seen the UFC move in the past. But what's crazy is then you would be dealing with the third consecutive heavyweight champion
right.
to become champion without beating existing undisputed champion. You know, we watch this happen over and over again. After Francis Ngannou left as champion, you know, John Jones became champion. John Jones relinquished his belt. Like and Tom Aspinall was promoted from interim champion without having a chance to beat the champion. So you keep seeing this happen over and over again in the division, and it gets less and less forgivable, because it's one thing where, all right, you couldn't come to terms with Francis. We can all talk about things we think you could have done differently there beforehand, but hey, that's how he wanted it. You can't make him sign a contract if he doesn't want to. He leaves. You go, all right. John Jones is a champion. He decides, all right, that's it. I'm retiring. Walks off with the belt. You go, again, can't make a guy fight. It would have been pretty cool of him to at least stick around and do an actual meaningful heavyweight title fight. He decided not to. You promote Tom Aspinall. But this one would be very consciously being like, we all know who the undisputed champ is. He still wants to fight. He's still around. He's still under contract to the UFC. But we're impatient and maybe also looking for a way to stick a knife in on his manager. And therefore, the politics of the moment excuse it that we can just move on without him. Because there's got to be a point where you can only yourself devalue these belts so much before everybody else devalues them too. It's been a years-long process of like pushing that. You know, how many interim titles can we get? How much can we just move these belts around at a whim? But at a certain point, you have watered down what it means to be heavyweight champion so much. How do you come back from it? Like, there's not like a lineage that you're building. You're just deciding like, that guy, heavyweight champion now. And that defeats the entire purpose of the exercise of having guys fight over this hardware. That's the purpose of the belt, is to be like a physical reminder of who has beaten whom and how it has traveled along. And you're completely ditching that. And especially if you're seen to be ditching it because you're angry at him for choosing Eddie Hearn, or you think that what a baby, he's taking all this time to make sure his eyes work. It's not a great look for the UFC, honestly.
How bitter would the feud between Dana and Hearn have to be that you would expedite Josh Hokett into this spot, especially just given like the whole situation? And I mean, this is one of those things, if you saw Dana's kind of, and even his comments coming out of it, like obviously like Hokett has rubbed Dana the wrong way, but how bitter then would that make the dispute between Eddie and, you know, Dana if he wants to do business with Hokett above the obvious fight here too? You know what I mean? Like you've wanted what Ben just pointed out is exactly right. You wanted the Gone Aspinall fight to mean something in the first place. Well, now it does mean something. It actually holds a whole different value than it did the first time. It's five times bigger the second time through. So for you to forego that, you know, and to expedite Josh Hokett, for instance, we're speculating a little bit here based on, you know, Hokett saying he will fight this year for the belt, which could happen even if they did, right? Like even if they did the normal progression here. It's definitely a strange thing, but this would tell me that the Hearn Dana feud trumps everything else, because honestly, I don't think Dana's the biggest Hokett fan. I know that they like that he's like kind of drawing eyes in, but at the same time, I don't really think he's in love with him.
Mm, yeah, you're right. I agree with you on that. I think we all agree, right, that this Eddie Hearn Dana thing is one of the most interesting things that's happening in our sport. Like this is a very, very interesting thing that we haven't really seen before. Someone coming from a different sport completely and trying to poke their finger in the chest of the biggest dog in the yard, which is Dana White. I think we all, from a media point
of view, who, by the way, is in the other backyard poking his chest at Dana, you know, yeah, and taking over his sport. He's beating, you know, yeah.
Okay, that's what you think. Yeah. But I think we're all...
Call it what it is.
We're invested in this kind of in a way that we haven't been before. And Hearn is a linguist that's able to kind of put it on Dana like we haven't seen before either. My question is there's no doubt that we all love this, but just in terms of his management of Aspinall, I still think the jury's out until we see what happens with this title dispute. But Ariel asked him kind of point blank on the show, like, do you think you've done a good job? And this is what Eddie's had to say about it.
I actually think we're going to add a huge amount of value to the UFC. Like, if you think about what has happened to Tom's profile,
okay, so tell me, what has changed?
So what has changed is, in my opinion, I mean, firstly, he's making more money now outside of the octagon than he's making in it commercially, right? He's driven over seven figures already in terms of commercial.
His own deal? What else?
His own deal, his CloudBet deal, just another one that's about to be announced literally today.
Okay.
Appearance, I mean, his podcast, like this guy's social numbers and digital numbers across his podcast. You know, Charlie and the team, they're really smart people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're doing huge numbers. But right now, amongst all the commotion and all that noise, you've got a guy that is one of the most talked about guys on the UFC roster in Tom Aspinall. Fact, right? So, yeah, important that we drive, but also what we're doing in turn is, right, you have a fight in front of you with Cyril Garn against Tom Aspinall that, correct me if I'm wrong, is one of the biggest fights that can get made in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom Aspinall right now sits as one of the biggest stars in the UFC. So I think we're actually driving a huge amount of value, not just for Tom, but also for the UFC, because they've got a monster fight on their hand with that, if it can get made.
So, I pushed back in quite an aggressive manner on the Ari Lohan show. It was warm, okay? You understand now I had no fans. Now I'm being fanned at the moment, and I can say my piece a bit more clearly here. I think that the jury's still out on Hearn in terms of if this is a good move for Tom. And the things that he listed off there, I think Tom already had a massive profile. He was headlining events in the UK. He headlined MSG and won the interim title there. You know, he was appearing on BBC, terrestrial TV shows, variety shows, nothing to do with sport, like, which is crazy for an MMA guy to be in. He had signed this massive deal with Champion, like a prestigious apparel brand, who only really sponsor him and Katie Taylor, the closest thing we have to like a sporting deity in Ireland. You know, so you'd assume this is a big deal and they were very selective who they worked with. The line about making more money outside of the octagon than he is in it, I think is like, well, he hasn't fought since you've come in there. So I think that's kind of unfair as well. Now, I'm not saying Eddie's doing a bad job here. I just haven't seen evidence as to celebrate like this has been brilliant. This has been great and everything's going great here for Tom. And until we have the piece of whether the UFC are comfortable doing business with Tom sorted out here, we really can't say anything. I don't know if you know, he mentions the podcast. When I was over with Tom for the surgeries, Andy Aspinall was showing me the podcast studio. Like, this is not something that's come about because he's in business with Eddie Hearn. Mm-hmm. This was already there. As he mentioned, Charlie is his, well, it's belittling to call Charlie a media guy because he does everything. He's on the podcast with Tom as well. He does a great job. He does so much. Andy does so much securing these deals. I just don't know if there's one piece of evidence I can point to right now. Say, like, if he got a deal with Gucci or something, and he's like, we got Tom Aspinall is the new face of Gucci. I'd be like, oh, shit. Like, he got him the fucking,
right.
He got him the Gucci deal. I just want something to be able to say to people, because we have to deal and be realistic here. There's a lot of people in the MMA world that lambast Tom and Eddie for their partnership and going against the UFC. I just want some to hold up something and be like, well, he did this. And then I will give him all the credit in the world. I'm not saying he's done a horrible job, but I'm just saying the jury's still out. Do either of you think that's unfair for me to kind of have that way of thinking, as opposed to being like, as Eddie says, he's knocking it out of the park?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of classic promoter speak, right? Is,
yeah,
to,
of course.
As soon as you start doing the job, tell everybody that you're doing an amazing job.
It's classic Dana White,
yeah,
too. You know,
it's like exactly what he would do. I am a little surprised that Gucci is the brand you went with.
I don't know the brands, okay? I don't know them.
That's maybe not
a good one.
That's not who I would be aiming for. Who makes a good track suit? That's what I think.
Champion. Unfortunately, he's already in business with them. He's already in business with them. He's got the tracksuit.
There you go. Maybe a tracksuit deal, like a Big and Tall.
What's that beer he liked, Petey? The beer that you guys were drinking together, and he seemed to have a fancy for it.
That was actually Bud Light. He's like, I like Bud Light. And I was like, what?
A niche beer like Bud Light. Jump on.
From the north of England, and your tipple of choice is Bud Light? What the hell? Yeah. I know you're an athlete. Come on.
I didn't think you guys even stocked any beer that had light anywhere in the name. I thought that was just something.
Tom's
you didn't
in better
do.
Shape than most people in this neck of the woods. Let's be honest. Okay. Maybe we could learn something from Tom in that regard.
maybe some kind of mustache and goatee grooming device. Something like that.
Be good.
That's the kind of thing that
archery. Some kind of archer, because he looks like a classic archer.
Yeah, but I don't know. My big fear in all this is that Tom gets treated like a pawn in this game and is manipulated, where two guys are trying to attack each other, and here he is in the prime of his career, the heavyweight champion, the guy that we should all be talking about. All the roads should have to run through him. And if it ends up where he just kind of gets used, I think that would be a real bummer. Because It's frustrating to me when we have these moments like right now It's clear what fight should have to happen for the UFC heavyweight title. It's got to be Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. And when you have Tom saying like, all right, my return now feels possible in a way that it didn't necessarily a few months ago. I'm looking forward to that date. Like that can actually happen now. We shouldn't be talking about anything else. The UFC should have really highlighted that from the moment they booked this Ciryl Gane Alex Pereira thing, is that the winner gets to fight Tom Aspinall. And when you have Ciryl Gane coming out as the winner with some controversy, then controversy that also should technically help out Tom, because it should be the kind of thing where people are going, see, look, this guy, he'll bend a rule or two. And didn't we just see him eye poke Tom? Like, it's the best thing you could hope for is Tom Aspinall, because it maybe brings people around to retroactively going, yeah, you got screwed in that Ciryl Gane fight. He cheated. He's a cheater. And you were a victim of it. And let's see you punish him. Let's see Ciryl Gane's cheating punished by Tom Aspinall's fists. That should be the promise of this fight. And everything should be building to that. I understand having Josh Hokett as a guy who's kind of like waiting in the wings, because if you strip away all the annoying parts of Josh Hokett, which is most of what he has tried to present,
it's considerable.
He's the kind of guy we should get excited about at heavyweight. He's young, athletic, undefeated, and he finishes people. Those things at heavyweight, that's enough. You don't need to be doing all this other stuff. All the other stuff really is at this point kind of just getting in your own way. It makes sense to have him hanging around as sort of like an heir apparent. He could be up who's next, but like, absolutely, it should be Tom Aspinall and Ciryl Gane. And it just seems troubling to me that the UFC is not drawing everybody's focus on that.
You guys feel like these new gloves, that the whole Whitman thing that was going on, and these new gloves that kind of curved down, and they're talking about trying to work out this deal, is all based on this Gane thing, like. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good point.
And I mean, obviously, like, it's a parallel now, right? Like, you haven't come back now that see this urgency to get a deal done on these new gloves, which we hadn't seen in the past. It's just seems more than coincidence.
The glove here. Thing is doing so...
the old Dr. Evil.
100 million.
Yeah.
That, well, I know. That is that's funny.
The thing, too, is like trying to paint it that way, is of like they're being entirely unreasonable about us buying. And it's like, the difference between you saying like we want to go into business with them for these gloves and we want to just own it entirely, and you're asking them to name a price, with them knowing they will never see another dime for their creation after they pay you this price, and so that's going to be a different kind of deal you're working out. Dana's trying to portray them as being like entirely unreasonable about it, but then it's also like, hey, man, wasn't it just like a couple of years ago that you were out there at UFC 300 talking about, we're really excited about our new glove design, and they were touting all the money and time that they had invested into creating these new gloves, which did absolutely nothing, tried to do absolutely nothing about the eye poke thing, wasn't even a consideration when they were designing these gloves, only for them to turn around, you know, months later and be like, actually, you know what? Forget these new gloves. We don't like them. Going back to the old ones, and you went, okay, so that was all just money completely wasted. You want to talk about like these people asking for too much money for their glove design. You took a bunch of money and lit it on fire for these gloves that you then abandoned really quickly after that. And they didn't even try to address the eye poke thing, which think about like not only this Tom Aspinall situation, how many fights have we seen in recent memory that got ruined because of eye poke? So like it would be in your best interest to at least try to do something to address this problem. And instead of just like explaining all the reasons why you feel like you can't.
It was fun to see Dana negotiate through the media again, though, you know, because he used to do this all the time. He'd tell you exactly what's going on from their side, put pressure on the other side to come off of this ludicrous. You know what I mean? We used to see that a lot from him.
Deontay Wilder money. That was the thing he used to say.
Oh, yeah. 30 million. But it's also like, we know you're getting 7.7 billion now for the next 7 years. It's kind of hard to be like, can you believe 100?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, like, too. That's what I think every time we saw it with Islam Makhachev talking about, you know, the fight that didn't happen between he and Ilya Topuria at the White House, where he's sort of bragging, right? Like being out there like, hey, they offered me this fight. I said, yes, I didn't ask for anything extra. He asked for extra money to do this fight. And so like trying to paint him for looking bad. And it's, you kind of want to take a step back and be like, you do realize the thing you're bragging about is having no negotiating ability whatsoever. Like I was not going to like.
Who's that guy's manager?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
oh, never mind.
You were out there just being like, is it like, and if I'm the UFC, that's what I want. My greatest hope is that it will turn into a virtue that these guys are willing to fight for so little. They will brag about it. They will brag, like, I must not be scared because I'm willing to fight for so little. And you're just like, man, that the NFL players are looking at you and weeping right now.
Yeah.
that is not how it works in their world.
I know.
We have some markets here from Calci on who will be the UFC heavyweight champion on December 31st, 2026. And let me see, because my vision is awful. It's Tom Aspinall. It's Big Tommy. Aspinall 52%. Right. Got Gan there. Gan 40%. And then your boy Josh Hoka at 17%.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Salsa Boy at 6%.
Salsa Boy hanging around.
That's a market that I don't imagine is going to see a lot of trades, is what I'll say on that one.
No.
Don't see a lot of traders getting into that market.
It does seem with Tom Aspinall, though, you're like, what's the best chance for Tom Aspinall to not be the heavyweight champion? And it
and
is
that's just not letting him fight.
It's just the UFC taking it away from him. You know?
Which feels real 50-50.
Yeah, it does.
It's starting to feel more, and it's fucking so upsetting because Tom is a beast. We were all sitting here going, this could be fucking really special. This could be really fucking special.
Yeah, man.
And then this horrific thing happens, and now it's like Dana reacts the way he does, which of course is going to make Tom's camp feel a certain way. Even the way they announced him as heavyweight champion, fucking, you know, just saying in the middle of Azerbaijan one night, John Jones is gone. Well done, Tom. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, we waited 2 years for this. And then,
and not having me at the White House. I mean,
fuck.
Like, when he's next in the wings there.
He's being treated so poorly.
I mean, these are all bad signs, boys.
You know what, Chuck? Yes. I mean, when you say it all out loud, it's not looking good right now. And I fucking hate that it's not looking good because I would love this rematch. I would love to see this guy go on a run. I'd love to see him and Hoke it.
I'm glad we'll see if this podcast kind of great anticipation for that, by the way. It's good promotion for him in that sense. But him pointing out that he's ready, ready to start rolling is we can now pinpoint a date and time when he's saying this. Right. And you can say like, so what's happening here? Like you can actually compare it to something.
I think it would be awesome if when this podcast drops, it's just like a true crime podcast. Like it has nothing to do with any of this.
No, he's got guests. It's not even really about MMA, unfortunately. It's like,
that would be awesome.
Tom has always really wanted to get into like the history of the French Revolution. And now he's just like, all right, I have a platform. We're going to talk about it. First up, professor from the University of Nice. Very excited to have him on. Like that would be great.
That would be cool. And it would be like, okay, so Eddie was working something on the back end on this. We could actually point to something tangible and say, like, this is where Eddie's been helping him, right?
Yes. Eddie's also a massive fan of World Wars. he says he wants war. It seems like we're heading towards that. Well, let's talk about Hoka, because Hoka did this interview with Ariel, and I agree with everyone that was like, well, this is a new side of Hoka. What my takeaway, though, is kind of like, well, he's kind of just told us that he is doing this. He is putting on a performance to escalate his career, to elevate his career. And that's fine that, like, he's not the first person to do this. But it's also like, I don't know what that says about the fan base where he's like, oh, no, like, I just know that you guys want to hear this stupid shit. And I just say it and then you just lap it up and then I potentially fight for a world title. And everyone's like, Josh Hogan's so based, man. That is based. That guy is based. That's what the kids say. They go,
I mean, in the pro wrestling world, and I know Ben pays attention to this, right? Like, if you break kayfabe, which is everybody these days, like, everybody knows that you're in a world of entertainment. They accept that other side. But that's the thing I took offense with. It was like, I'm going to appear as my normal guy here. And I'm going to tell you, like, hey, this is the game. I'm just better at the game than most people. And like he's telling you that I vomit a little bit on the scale and I'll, play, bashful and, whatever he's doing at the press conference. And like, you're saying that I know that you dupes
will like it and keep doing it, like keep eating it up.
But they
right?
don't
and
then like
he's speaking directly to us.
Nobody
he's
likes
speaking
it.
Directly to us dupes. I know that. I know. But he's saying that he's basically saying that I know that this draws eyes, right? Like it doesn't matter, like the whatever the threshold for obnoxious scale or however you want to look at it. He's like, I'm going right past, like whatever you if you draw a line, he's like, I'm gonna go past that. And it's kind of like I pointed this out in the column I wrote, like the predecessors is like his, you know, his forefathers being like you know, Colby Covington and Sean Strickland, I guess to an extent Bryce Mitchell, have laid the groundwork for, well, you could just move the line, just keep moving it, and people, you know, will talk about it and all this. It feels like he's just happily going into this, but to tell the dupes.
Yes.
Like, hey, I know that you're dupes, and I'm gonna keep doing this because you're dupes. And like, but that's what's weird. So now you're just it, that seems very strange to me too. That didn't sit well with me. That's
that,
all.
The thing that annoys me about it is that the gimmick sucks, dude.
Yeah,
it sucks well, so bad.
That goes without saying. Ben.
Well, I mean, but see, that's the thing.
I was there, dude. I was there when he was like interrupting at that press conference, and you could hear the groans even from the people behind, which was the sea of people. It was like, what is that? Like, usually, you know,
the thing that I think of is. When Chael Sonnen came out and did his whole shtick running up to the Anderson Silva fight, and it became his new thing going forward, and arguably he is still doing it. And
yeah,
but the thing was, it was fun in a weird way. It kind of had a Bobby the Brain Heenan quality where
sure.
he's saying some stuff where he's talking about the Nogueras trying to feed a carrot to a bus, and you're like, I don't want to laugh at this.
It's delivery,
you know.
It's
and,
humor,
yes, like, and know, it's clever, and it's something where you're going like,
it's so perfect.
I still remember being in like some hotel conference room for one of these. I don't even know if it was a press conference or like a media thing in Oakland, or it was in like San Francisco for the fight in Oakland when he fought Anderson Silva the first time,
yeah.
and he was doing his whole shtick. The most memorable moment for me was him bragging about having won the Republican primary with like 97% of the vote or something. And Ariel asked him, was that the one where you ran unopposed?
I was there. Yeah. And he's like, and then he says, yes.
No, yeah. There's like just enough of a pause as he leans into the microphone and says, because Ariel's like, that's the one where you ran unopposed, right? And there's just sort of a pause because you're like, is Chael going to flip out at this? And he leans forward and he's like, correct. And so it was like, it was funny and that it was clever.
Was
and
brilliant.
So like when he was doing the shtick, you were kind of spellbound a little by it, but you were also caught up in it because you were going, you are really poking the bear here with Anderson.
Yeah.
And
exactly. That's why it worked.
It worked because Anderson, the whole knock on Anderson Silva at the time was he's uninterested and the competition isn't even serious enough to force him to be interested. And now here comes a guy and Anderson seems genuinely mad, like he really wants to hurt this guy. And it worked to build up that interest. And then the degradation happened along the way from that, because a lot of people tried after Chael Sonnen to do a similar kind of bit, and we all got to learn in the process, oh, not everybody can do that. Chael made it look easy, but it's not necessarily easy.
Right.
And then the Colby Covington variety of it came along and was just like, what if my only focus was on being such an asshole that I made everybody mad.
Ugly American.
And it's like, the whole thing is a desire for engagement, right? You're trying to get a response out of the audience. And Chael did it in a little bit more like nuanced and multifaceted way. But Colby Covington went and kind of just like took a sledgehammer to that and was just like,
right.
The one thing that I know that's easy to do is to piss people off by being an asshole and or an idiot. If you do those things on purpose, there is a pretty predictable reaction that you're going to get from people. It's much easier to do those things. The only problem is you do get the reaction and people go, this guy's an asshole and an idiot and I hate him. And Colby Covington ran into it because...
And look how fast we brushed Colby aside when he walked away.
Because we weren't enjoying
it. That's a good point.
We weren't having fun while he was doing it.
Nobody gave a fuck. Yeah.
And
nobody gave a fuck.
He also ran into the problem of you're talking all this shit about people, but that you still would like to take off the costume and go eat at the breakfast buffet and just be Colby off the clock, and they're not going to let you. They're going to run up on you at the breakfast buffet. They're going to run up on you when you're leaving the poppy steak. You know, like that's the problem is that it followed him in a way he did not anticipate. And you're right, Chuck, that like as soon as he said like, all right, I'm retiring, everybody went, okay, bye.
See ya, buddy.
Like, not concerned with that at all. And so Josh Hogan is coming along, and now he's like doubling down by being like, I'm making you guys all hate my gimmick. Ha ha ha. Like, I've won. I've got you. And you're just like, you don't need to be doing this. Nobody's enjoying it. Everybody is kind of embarrassed by it. That's the thing that's like making MMA fans embarrassed, especially after the White House thing, was everybody was just being like, bro, we had company over. You know, this was our opportunity to show a best side of ourselves. And you were the one guy who kind of ruined it. You were the guy who made the headlines coming out of it. Everybody had been like, yeah, whatever we assumed that these people were up to over there in the UFC MMA world, this guy confirmed that that's what they're doing. And everybody else went, God damn it, Josh. We were having a nice time. Even Dana White is walking sideways away from you. Donald Trump is taking off the chain. Like, all the stuff we've heard from Sean Strickland and stuff over the years. Yeah. And like, imagine what it takes to get all these other people to be like, that sucks. I don't ever want to see that again. Like, that is not you succeeding at it. Just because you are getting that engagement, these people aren't thinking far enough down the road about like what kind of engagement and what that means about your relationship with the audience.
I just somehow that doesn't. Do you know what, one thing though, just to throw back to that UFC 117 thing? Remember before that, I think it was like in the buildup to that week, Chael had said something along the lines of Lance Armstrong having giving himself cancer, and he went on Jim Rome and they played it to him, and he goes, that's not me. Yeah. That guy sounds like he's got a Hispanic accent. Like, this was when you mentioned Bobby the Brain or playing the role. I was like, dude, he played it on levels that we had never seen in the sport, right? Like, he was doing it on levels that you're like, wow, this is completely different than anything
you've
seen.
So many as well, right? Like, as you guys were talking, you were bringing up your favorite ones. I was thinking about the one where he's deadpan on the camera talking about how hard it was growing up in Portland, Oregon.
West Lynn, on the mean streets of West Lynn. Yeah.
I mean, he'd say, like,
the guy who openly littered.
Yeah. It was some years when my dad barely made 100K. I
know. You talk about the neighbors, the twins who got one Mercedes and they had to share it.
It's fun.
So great.
It was absolutely unbelievable.
I know.
I guess the Hoka thing for me.
But see, that's funny though, right?
It's
like,
very
it's like
funny.
If you're trying to be funny, it's like that's how you do
and,
it.
And in fairness to Chael as well, I only met him once, and that was backstage at Ariel's at the launch of Uncrowned. And he's fucking Chael all the time. He was wearing this big fucking belt buckle. And I was just like, oh my God. I had a conversation with Chael Sonnen being Chael Sonnen, and it felt completely effortless. He sat down and he was talking to everyone in the room like you'd expect Chael Sonnen to. Piece of piss, walked out on stage, did 30 minutes, came back out, stuck around for a while, ate the buffet, all being himself.
Well, that's the thing about Josh Hokitz is that it's clearly an act you're putting on and taking off. And all the...
It's even a costume. Yeah, it's glasses. Yeah, yeah. It's a hat. Like, he can't...
And
he finds it hard to just be himself, you know?
The pro wrestlers will always tell you that the best gimmicks are your real personality with the volume dialed up. And that's what, like, Chael's always was. And Josh Hogan is trying to do a thing where it's just like, he thinks that he's playing with, you are very conscious of me doing a gimmick, and I'm going to annoy you with that gimmick, and then I'm going to annoy you by changing the gimmick, I'm going to annoy you by dropping the gimmick. And you're like, it is much easier to annoy people than it is to entertain them, but they don't love you for it, and they don't miss you when you stop, you know?
Yeah, mosquitoes don't entertain you, you know? They just irritate you, but that's what he
and
is.
And again, you don't need to be doing it, man. You're an undefeated heavyweight.
He's a great fighter.
Dude, I will say that, like, he might be ratcheting up his, you know, his real person, but we just don't, like, he might be doing it and amplifying it in a way that you're like, okay, man, what is, because I saw some of that too, when he's basically explaining away the, that cheap excuse he was given for the Michelle Obama comment. He's basically saying, like, you know, like, she's a man, like, she works hard like a man. Like, he's throwing some casual misogyny into the mix from now the what real perspective. So I'm not sure, man. Like, you feel like there's a he was hinting at other stuff there too. You feel like there's a there's an ugly streak that he just amplifies right into this character.
It's also that clip farming thing, like, where he's, you can tell he's just thinking about, like, I need like 15 seconds of this to go viral. And he's hitting Ariel, the Jewish dude, with the, you know, the Adolf Hitler stuff. And you're just going to go on like,
exactly that.
You know, someone's going to pull this off, put it out there. And I just don't know. Like, I think the unsettling, not unsettling, the awkward feeling I get from Hokut is like, what is this telling me about where the sport's at and where the fan base is at, you know? Because it does reverberate with some people. Like, people are like, yeah, he did it again. He said something crazy. Yeah. You know? And it's like, is that what this has become now? Just like, fucking, let's just say the world is shit, like, and let's see if it gets loads of likes. You know? What the, like, I mean, there used to be a sport here. There used to be a sport here, you know?
There'll be people telling us after this that,
why are you going at Hokut, man? Free speech.
You guys are bitches.
Huck Mendenhall.
Yeah.
At it again.
Yeah, that one was right there the whole time. I never even thought of
it. I'm the only one who ever. Actually, I have been called that.
Chuck said that to me once, and I was like trying not to just break into tears of laughter. I was like, that's a really good one, man. Don't give them that one.
That is a good one. That is a good one.
Fucking hell. Go and check out Chuck's article, by the way. It's up on Uncrown now. Absolutely brilliant stuff and hilarious as well. Chuck known for a zinger to himself. Yeah, I was laughing away to it. Just imagining Hokut performing as a stand-up comedian made me chuckle as I was reading it today. Ben.
Yeah, the visual of it is funny, but the actual
showing his ass, you know, as they say in the business. Ben, you had the tough task of writing about this Dustin Poirier incident we've seen at the airport. The video is ugly. There's no doubt about it. There's slurs. It's Poirier like we've never seen him before. And Poirier, to his credit, has come out and addressed this and said, like, you know, he is working on himself. He realizes the error of his ways. Tell us, Ben, how have you passed through this incident with Poirier, a beloved figure in the sport?
Yeah, and the fact that he is a beloved figure, I think, is what complicates it for a lot of people, is because, you know, when you first heard Dustin Poirier arrested for drunk in public, I don't know if they even have that crime where you are PC, but here in America.
I mean, I was thinking at the time, I'm going to need some video here because
we don't use it that often here in America.
Yeah, they call it public drunkenness, right?
Yeah.
Arrest everyone in Ireland now at 6 p.m. Just walk through the streets.
Well, and it does have to mean you were causing a problem and drawing attention to the fact that you were drunk in public. And then when you find out, oh, it was in an airport, that's when you go, okay, I think I can see what kind of happened here. And when you see the video, it's even worse than that. First of all, I want to say about that video, credit to that cop, man. He handled that thing as well as you possibly could. We've seen plenty.
I don't want to fight, bro.
Especially once because
he did the shorts grab too.
Yeah. We realized right away, oh shit, that's Dustin Poirier. He's going right into his Philly shell and grabbing his shorts. Let me back up.
Did he grab the shorts?
He grabbed the shorts.
I didn't even.
He did.
Oh my God, I would have been like backing the hell up.
And he did. That guy was like, let me put some distance between me and him and let me get this taser out.
It would have been no footage of Poirier
just
if that was
case.
Me. It would just been the shorts.
I mean, that's why, you know, they talk all this stuff about, like, let's train the FBI agents and MMA because, of course, FBI field agents do a ton of hand-to-hand combat. No, really what you want is them at least watching enough MMA that they recognize when they see somebody who you don't want to mess with. You see the ears, you see it's Dustin Poirier, you go, uh-oh. Let's see if we can talk our way out of this one. We see so much body cam footage that is awful, so it's nice to see one where you're like, that guy de-escalated that situation well. And even Dustin Poirier fist bumping him at the end, and you're just like, hey.
Plan, no.
But, you know, there's a lot of other ugly stuff in that video, and it got me thinking, like, if this were a video of Jon Jones or Conor McGregor doing all this exact same stuff, you'd be like, yeah, that's that about figures, doesn't it? You know, not even in the top three of the worst stuff that they would have done. And so, but when you see it with Dustin Poirier, we expect so much better from him. We had so much higher of a concept of him that it feels like, oh, like this one hurts more to see that this is what's going on with Dustin right now.
The dude was inducted into like the UFC Hall of Fame based on his philanthropic, whatever the like the
the charitable donations.
No, but like what is his charity, which is called
Good Fight,
The Good Fight. I mean, that's where we held him, right? And this is a guy too that you've watched from even before he made it to the UFC, or right as he was going in through the Fightville, you know, documentary. People who'd watch that were like, you'd seen this guy as a kid. You'd seen what's in his heart from the time he started all the way through his career, where he basically maintained, honestly, like a halo effect through that whole process. Like I think he was mostly just a good guy, right? Like it was difficult to see him. In fact, as he went on, we were giving him kudos for speaking his mind the right way and just being such a, remember the, I'm not the man, I'm a man, that whole amazing thing. And like,
That's added something to this as well, right, Chuck? That line, it just keeps playing in my head when I look at the... Like, this is a guy who's been aware of this person inside him for a long time. And I think that's what that line says to me now when I say, I'm not the man, I'm just a man.
Right. Like, and, this is a guy, and that's what I think is like one of the things to try to keep in mind. I've heard from one of my podcast listeners this week who's from Louisiana and was saying like, you know what? I know where Dustin grew up. I know the kind of environment he grew up in because it's very familiar to me. So I knew all that stuff was in there somewhere. And it still hurts to see it come out in this like public of a forum. But I also, my mind immediately kind of went to, I've heard from a lot of different fighters that this transition from active fighter, the life you've known for your entire adult life, basically, to retired fighter is a really tough one. And so I guess it's not that surprising to me that that's when somebody might find like I'm filling the void somehow with alcohol, with drugs for different people, you know, whatever it might be. I'm filling the void in unhealthy ways. I'm self-medicating my way through this difficult transition because it is a huge life change to go from everybody thinks of you as you're so-and-so the fighter. You wake up every day, you know what you're doing because you're training, trying to get better as a fighter, trying to prepare for the next fight. And then all that stuff is just suddenly gone. And now you're just Dustin. And you're trying to figure out who that is and how he fills his days. And you might screw it up along the way. And so I think that there is a difference, though, of with some fighters, we've seen a pattern of behavior over time that goes. That's who that guy is. And with Dustin, this is the deviation from the pattern. And so we still feel like that's not who that guy is. That's that guy on his worst possible day. And it seems like
you want to give him the mulligan.
Too. Yeah.
You want to give him the mulligan. And I mean, there's also a guy like, he's a bright guy. You know, like if he goes back, go back, you see what happens with this. But he's got like, he's in that beer commercial. Like he has endorsements that are like, you know, other people would be dying for, you know, like he's also got a position with the UFC, you know, where he's got the analyst role and all that stuff. And I feel like, I mean, not that the UFC is going to do anything with him. I don't think that they would part ways with him, but there's still a lot to lose. Even outside of his just fight career, he's going to be able to put that together and say like, you know what, there's still a lot at stake here for me to be acting the fool out there. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's just, you know, everybody's had a bad drunken moment, you know? Like, this is one of those just moments. You got to kind of, yeah. Fortunately, we weren't surveilled during ours, you know, hopefully. I mean, maybe there's some footage out there of some bad shit I've done, but.
Yeah. It's,
but yeah, man, you got to kind of give him a mulligan, right? Like, you got to almost be like that with him here.
I had a few people just kind of, I didn't comment, and we talked about it on Ariel's show, and Ariel said what he said, and we're talking about it now. But I had a few people reach out to me, like, just randomly on Twitter being like, oh, you fucking lambast Connor for everything he does and blah blah blah, and I disagree.
You get accused both ways
all the time. But one thing I thought about when I saw that, I was like, you're wrong. Like when Connor started fucking up at around 2017, I was on like national radio stations having this attitude, like, this isn't who this guy is. He's been caught in a moment. I know the guy, this is not who he is. Then it happens again, and it happens again, and we don't have to reference the Ringer article where we had to list everything that had happened in the space of
4,000 words.
It was 4,000 words, and it was over a 3-year period. But from there comes a certain time, to Ben's point, when if things just keep going wrong, it becomes like, well, shame on me because I'm wrong. I thought you weren't this guy, but you have become this person. And I think it's way too early in the day for us to be out here shaking our fists at Dustin Poirier and saying, oh, you did that. Game over. You fucked up. He fucked up. No one is trying to say he didn't fuck up. It's a very bad look. All of that stuff. But I think speaking for the three of us, based on what we've said here, I think we want to think that Dustin can get on the other side of this and be a force for good in the world and in MMA, because he always has been up to this point. Like this is just a blip on the radar as far as I'm concerned. Too far.
You're right though about the patterns, because like, remember when John Jones was the Vegas one where he was like slamming his head on the police car? It's almost like you just kind of put that one away, man, because there was too many other things to focus on. Like that one didn't live very long. That piece of footage.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, and I hope Dustin gets the help that he needs. He's come out and talked about it as well, which you have to give him points for as well. He has not shied away from this. I've made a mistake. Someone who didn't make a mistake is the UFC, because they put on an event at the White House and it has 34 million views worldwide in your face, Ben, folks. What are you going to say about that, folks? Huh?
He has nothing to say.
He has nothing to say. Look at him.
He's acting like he's muted. He has nothing to say.
Yeah,
that's right,
folks. Take that.
I don't know if you realize this, but my job is writing about this sport, so I do want it to be popular.
Shit.
I want as many people as possible to be into this sport, because otherwise, if people don't care, we don't have jobs anymore. So, yeah.
No, you're right. We'll edit that stuff out.
Yeah, no, pretty good, though.
I mean, it still leaves Joe Rogan off by about, 120 million.
100 million.
Poor Rubio. He missed the mark by almost a billion.
But see, that's why social. He was talking about social numbers, because that was like a squillion.
Okay.
They were like, we've got
that was a squillion.
We've got two squillion.
Post that. Yeah. You're right.
I think it was always dumb to go out here and throw out these numbers before you had any. Numbers before the event even started, and some numbers that were just made up numbers after the event. You didn't need to do that. You didn't need to. Nobody was out here being like, damn it, give us a number that you expect. You could have just been like, we think a lot of people are going to watch. It's going to be very popular.
Gonna be big.
Right. It's going to be big. That's all you had to say. Yeah. It's going to be big.
Yeah. And you could even say, we think it's going to be the biggest event we've ever done.
You could say that. You didn't need to set yourself a benchmark that people are still going to stay.
Biggest event in the history of the world.
Yeah.
I think used a few times.
You didn't need to do any of that at all. You could just have been like, we think this is going to be big. And then when you can come out and say 34 million, however math you're using to get to that.
Yeah, that would be
you'd be like, we did it.
If you don't set
no one could sit there and tell you 34 million isn't big.
Right.
Yeah. Fair play to them.
What was the Super Bowl, just out of curiosity, global number?
126 million, I think was.
That's U.S. though,
global?
Right?
No, that was worldwide.
How many people are in your country again? We've only got a few.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We don't have that many.
Jordan, can you give us that information?
300 million, maybe?
His country is Montana. He doesn't even know.
Yeah, he doesn't give a fuck about it. A billion and a half, according to Joe Rogan. That's what Jordan.
No, yeah, that's not correct.
Do not. Don't run with that. Don't clip that. It's
speaking of numbers, the AI. What are they? The new meta rankings.
Damn it!
Go ahead and say it, PT.
What are they? What the fuck are these new rankings? I don't know what they are. And they had champions I'd never even heard of in some cases. When I checked them on the show, and I was like, "Are you serious?" And I'm like, oh, "I had to send them a screenshot of what I was looking at." None of the champions were right. What is happening?
Wait, the champions were right? That's the part that the ranking shouldn't even touch, is who the champions are.
That's the easiest part to get right.
So you're saying that Navajo Sterling quite legitimately is the champion right now?
On Tuesday, when I checked these rankings, and everyone was like, they're up.
You got the glitch or something. I don't know what's going on there.
What is happening?
Okay, I keep getting annoyed because people being like, and I think Dana was the first one who said it, they're going to do AI rankings.
Right.
And it seems
at
a certain point, we are just throwing around AI when what we mean is computers. Okay. We're going to use computers to do it. Because I read CBS Sports had a thing up where they said that they were part of some, I think they referred to it as a limited Q&A with an unnamed UFC representative, not a Meta representative, but somebody who was explaining to them what these rankings are and how it works. And it was interesting. I wrote about it a little bit, and about what, the question for the rankings is still the same, which is the UFC going to abide by them? Are the numbers going to mean anything? Does this version of the rankings please the UFC enough to where they go, all right, number one's got to fight number two, and so on? I doubt it is my answer. But still, the thing that they were saying was that these rankings are not done by AI, that maybe the algorithm itself was built in part by AI, but it's still just a what they refer to as an Elo ranking system, meaning our pod Elo, the physicist who came up with the ranking system for chess players, which essentially, I don't know if you guys remember.
You're losing me here. Yeah. Okay, come on. Let's
basically,
bring it back.
You're creating a computer algorithm that says, here are these set data points that you should take into account for every fighter, and we will feed you the information on those data points, which is date of last fight, ranking of his opponent, how dominant he won, how quickly he finished it, or did he not finish it? Did it go to a decision? and how often he's fought, all those kind of data points. And we don't know exactly what's in the soup for the algorithm there.
That's what I want to know,
data points and everything. But it's not really very different from the sound of it from what Tapology came up with. I did a story on this last year where Tapology came up with their own Elo ranking system to rank every fighter in the UFC, not just the top 15, to like every single fighter. They send me like the email updates every week where they're just like, here's what the rankings look like now.
They have that strength of schedule thing as well.
Yeah.
I like that as well. Tapology,
And so it's just like a computer algorithm that you built. The algorithm, the computer does not watch the fights. It's just waiting on you to feed the information out. It spits out a number. They put the number up. And so sometimes you might get something weird. They claim there'll be no human intervention. I mean, sometimes you might get like a weird number and that is so different from what everybody expects. And there would be a temptation then to go in there and tweak it because it's like, we don't know. We're not watching as the computers put these numbers. We're just seeing when the UFC puts the numbers on the website. So they could mess with it. Also, one of the things that popped out to me was they said the UFC alone is responsible for determining who is eligible for the rankings. So if they say somebody's been out too long, then they're out. If they say, hey, we're in a contract dispute with this person, they're ineligible for the rankings, then they're out. So that part is, you know, the UFC's
still going
to
be manipulated.
It still has the power to put its thumb on the scale. We don't know yet if it will or anything, but it's like people just keep saying like AI rankings. You're like, no, it's just a computer algorithm. It's not really different. I mean, it might be the programming might not be exactly what Tapology has, but it's the same basic idea.
So what do you think of the AI rankings, Chuck?
You son of a bitch. You absolute dirtbird.
I hate AI, Pete. I don't even want to comment on it. It was fun. It was kind of fun to watch some of the people, because this is going to be the hard moment. You know, somebody was ranked and suddenly you're not ranked anymore. Like you fought to get into this ranking and now you're out. Because I saw Angela Hill point this out. She's like, I just finally got into the rankings. I'm ranked number 12. And then these things come out and I'm no longer there. And then she kind of is like, I beat her. You know, she goes down the list. And I'm like, you know, I feel like we're going to be hearing some of that stuff in the short term just based on these overlapping. I'm surprised, though, you know, with Meta putting these out, essentially, that we don't see Zuckerberg ranked number one across the board, you know. You know what I'm saying?
Don't
if you've
rule
got
it
that
out.
Fight with Elon.
You know what I mean? Coliseum.
There are weird ones, though. The truth is I didn't snapshot or like, I wish I would have snapshotted like where the rankings were just so you could go back. I don't know, Ben, if you did this, like where you were able to see what the biggest movements
were. Well, you could compare it. Like they let you toggle, right? Like the Meta rankings and the media rankings. That was the other thing
really?
Like you can,
okay, I didn't do
you
that.
Can go back and forth and compare because you can see some people. And to some extent, I think it highlights what they're trying to get at because they're going like the computer algorithm is trying to remove the idea that media people, human beings, get some people in their minds as this is a guy who matters in this division because I remember who he is or who he was, whatever. And so, therefore, I can't sit down and not include him. And the computer has no such biases. And so, it's like you see somebody like Robert Whittaker get bounced out because the computer is looking at recency and strength of schedule and all that kind of stuff. And human beings are keeping him in there because they remember Robert Whittaker's a champ. And I think that like that is an interesting element. I'll be interested to see how that plays out over time. They did say that they plan to phase out the media rankings. Even calling it media rankings was always a little bit, you know, you'd put air quotes around that idea because it was just like
it's like some AM station up.
Yeah, it was just basically whoever we could convince who still was willing to do it. That's who was doing it, and not people where this was their whole job. Is covering the sport. And so like I think that it's a fine idea. I'll be interested to see how it plays out over time. I think one of the weird things is like if we ask ourselves what the rankings were always for, they were a helpful guide in matchmaking, but we've seen all kinds of different matches get made. You know, it's not we regularly see number 13 versus number 4. You know, this thing that one of the things that was highlighted right away was Jan Blachowicz was like, hey, he was like number 4 or 5 in the media rankings fighting the number 10 guy. And they, you know, that bout's already signed, set for August. And then the Meta rankings come out and suddenly the other guy is still 10, but now Jan Blachowicz is 15. So it was the other guy fighting up the rankings.
See, that's a major
Jan league. Fighting down. Yeah. You see it right there. Like Jan was number Weird. 4 and Bogdan Guskov number 10. And so like now Jan got bumped down to 15. So he's the one fighting up the rankings. He's the one with more to gain now just because so of like weird. That change. And that's another one where human beings are probably ranking Jan that high because they remember that right. he was champion, because he's a guy in their
heads.
He's
a legendary Polish fucking power. Yeah, they know.
Because
okay. they know the computer, that he has.
The computer does not yeah. know about legendary Polish power. It will not take that's legendary Polish yeah. power into account.
But you still want to see the data metrics. Points because you're like, the data points, like, because you have Alex Pereira showing up at number four, right, in the heavyweight rankings. The guy's 0-1 mm-hmm. as a heavyweight. And I'm like, so I'm just like, okay, so I just want to know how they balance that out. Like, they feed what data into that portion of it where they're like, well, you got to take it. So what portion of that data point, you know, what emphasis is played on just your regular, your strength of schedule from the previous weight class? You know, it's just those things. I'm like, how they reconcile that part?
Yeah, so, I don't know.
I wish they were a little more transparent that way.
Speaking of heavyweights, we did have a bit of
you were looking for that
impromptu news as we were just about to do our thing there. Mr. Ariel Helwani's like, Pizzy, look at this, and then I had to look at it, and then I wasn't quite in the zone, and I was like, well, you're taking me out of it, but you're also giving. So let's see what he gave us.
Right,
give it a look there, Jordan. Alexander Usyk, this is a well-considered decision that I'm confident will open new opportunities for me. This is not the end of history. The continuation lies ahead. He is basically saying he's vacating all of his belts. I want to make them available so the guys who are next in line can fight for them. Friends, I'm leaving the belts, but I'm not leaving the sport because I still have my last dance. I want to thank everyone. I have great respect for all organizations. I want to thank everyone and say there's more to come. Glory to God and everything. Glory to Ukraine. We also have Mauricio Suleiman. Guess who's not very happy? What a disappointment it is for me to learn from a social media video that our heavyweight champion is vacating his WBC title. This is the current life we live in. I would even think it is AI. I personally wish Usyk great success in his life inside and outside the ring. Bit of a talking out the both sides of your mouth there, Mauricio. I'm not gonna lie to you, that feels and honestly, it fucking does look like AI.
It does.
That's how old I'm the same age as Mauricio Suleiman in my body now. When I'm looking at the world, I'm just like, they're gonna get me again. This is one of those youngsters playing tricks on
you,
me.
You watched a gorilla break dance. You thought it was real. Somebody had to tell you.
Elaine, he's really doing it.
Somebody had to tell you. You know what? I don't think this one is real. And it broke your heart. And now you approach the world with this grim skepticism.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it fucking is. So I'm gonna start crying. No one's ever nailed it like that. You know what I mean? But could this be a Zuffa thing? Could this be a I genuinely did not expect to do this badly against Rico Verhoeven, and now, please, conveniently, as Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury about the fight, there's suddenly belts available for this?
Could be a Zuffa thing. Or it could just be courtesy. You know, like the guys waiting in the wings who want to get their chance, now they do.
Usyk is pretty much the only guy I'd believe who's capable of that. Who was just
that's true.
I've made
that
this decision in a cave.
And he's made a shit ton of money. You know? It's not like he's it's not like he needs the symbols to
absolutely see that Rico fight maybe told him, like, we need to be wrapping things up here pretty soon. You don't want to hang around until you become like a real diminished version of yourself.
Seriously.
So, like, let's start thinking about the end and let's see, like, what makes sense to do with what time you have left.
Although that sucks for Itomo, right? Because you're like, I'm sure you've got that guy circled the whole time you're coming up here, you know, and now you're like, nah, that ain't gonna ever happen. Not that it was gonna happen anyway, but
I think there is gonna be a moment here where everyone's just like, oh shit, we didn't realize how good we had it at heavyweight boxing, because it went away for so long in the Klitschko era and all that stuff, where everyone's gonna like, don't really care. Fury comes along, AJ, Usyk, Dubois, Wilder, like, It was a massive escalation in what we got in terms of when Holmes or like then Klitschko was the champion. Lennox Lewis, even though he's a fantastic boxer, didn't really get you in the balls the way these lads did. Like this was a fantastic era. And now you're looking at, you're like, just what happens now? Itoma just fights a guy for a vacated title and becomes the all-seeing ruler of the division for the next 10 years, maybe? I mean, we had a hell of a run there. Thank you, Usyk.
Heavyweight is a disaster anywhere you look, man. Whichever league you look in, you know?
Tom Aspinall could be released from his contract, fight Itomo, win the belt.
Maybe that's what this is all about.
Boom.
You ever think about that?
Did not. did not. Ben's looking at me like I'm a fucking idiot. Ben, tell me, I know you always look at me like that, but I mean, do you have a different take?
You know what Ben's thinking? Ben's like, this show used to be an hour.
It used to be 60 minutes.
It used to be.
And here we are just bantering away.
Yeah, it's, we are in the banter section, in fairness. I'm very cool. I wanted to let you know. Not like, as in like, you know, oh, Petey, what a cool guy. As in just temperature-wise, my lower extremities.
See, you didn't. Leave some stuff to the imagination here. You know,
lower extremities can mean legs.
It doesn't, though, does it? In this case.
All three of them. All three legs.
I'm going to leave it open to interpretation. Whenever I'm watching NFL and the guy gets smacked, they're like, did they not say that? I could see him is moving his lower extremities. Did they not say that when he goes off the
yeah, and that is kind of bleak when you put it that, because it is just them saying, like, we don't think he's paralyzed. So, like, he might be messed up bad. I love the way they do it in hockey where they don't want to tell you anything. They'll just be like, this guy's out with a lower body injury. This guy's out with an upper body injury.
Or upper body. That's it. There's only two zones.
Upper body injury is a head, like?
Yeah. You can be a head and be an upper body injury.
Fucking they don't want targeting.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there was a match last week, a hurling game. Dublin were playing. Oh, my God. Dublin were playing. Clare. And there was a contact. The Schlitter went up. The two boys went up with their sticks. But a Dublin lad just creased the fella in the chin as he looking at the ball. And he went limp in the sky and he hit the ground. 20 minutes. Like, ambulance on the fucking thing. Everyone's going, like, what is going on? And this guy had an injury before. But holy shit, man. Like, what? Isn't that, like, the tensest TV you can watch? Like, when it's a live game and you're the game isn't really a contest anymore. Dublin were getting hammered. But, like, you're just, like, 20 minutes of waiting to see, will they be able to get this guy off? Is he okay? It's such a fucking, it's such a weird thing. It felt like I was watching for like 2 hours to wait, just see this guy get carried off. I've gone off on a tangent again. Sorry. Do we have any super chats, Jordan?
There it is.
Yeah. Okay. Are you aware of the shadow boxer from Ireland? Yes, I am, Dale Henderson. Shadow boxer is a man who lives in the mountains and who makes meals for his friends who come around, and he'll spar in his back garden. And he has a lovely dog. And he's also in the bare knuckle industry, but he seems to actually be able to fight a good bit. And then I've only seen one of his fights, I think. And he was fighting well. I thought he was winning the fight. And then he just kind of went, no, I don't want to fight. And he just gets out of the ring. Like, this is, he's an interesting guy. We're going to send you some of his stuff. But yes, I am aware of him. He had a beef with...
Please do. Yeah. Sounds interesting to me.
I'm intrigued.
He makes these dinners that, you know...
Second time you mentioned the dinners, which is not where I thought this was going to go.
Well, he makes these dinners, and sometimes he'll make them in like a dog's dinner bowl. And it will be like an Irish stew for one guy, and then he'll make a chicken burger on another one, and he'll have them both behind his back, and he'll walk up to his friends. One of them is called like Homeless Mickey, who looks homeless. And he'll say, which one do you want, Homeless Mickey? And he'll hit the right arm and he'll give him like the stew. And he'll be like, oh, great. And then he'll give the other guy the chicken burger. And then the two will just fight each other over the meal that they preferred. And
interesting.
It looks like, I don't want to make an enemy here, but it looks like the house could do with a good cleaning. Is what I'm saying to you. Like, you know, a good.
Should leave it at that. You know, it's.
I saw him cleaning his oven one day and I was like, I really hope he gets that thing clean, you know, because.
Yeah.
I don't know what risks you're taking eating food out of that thing. I'm going to say, hard to describe the man, but yes, I am aware of him.
I'm mostly just surprised to learn you guys have mountains for people to live in.
We have lots of the McGillicuddy Reeks, a beautiful mountain range.
Okay.
The McGillicuddy Reeks. Yeah. Anything else there, John? I mean, what is this thumbs up thing? We appreciate it, right? But like, just fucking ask a question. Like, say, here, Petey, you curly prick.
Donation.
Anything. Fuck you, Petey. You know.
Just say thank you to that person. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you is what I should have said. I apologize. What are your thoughts on there being no women's MMA title fights this year until August? Do you think they're slowly getting rid of the divisions? Shout out big time, Ben, folks.
Hell yeah. Hell
that's
yeah.
A lot of money as well. K-Wokes, she... Bitch,
this person's biased.
Jip. Yeah, it is kind of fucked up. And before you hit this, Ben, like, Chuck, you did a rankings. How much have those rankings changed? Dude. The women's rankings at all?
It's the worst part of it because they don't fight.
He's just
I've been sending you the same fucking women's ranking.
I know, you guys don't even look at the women's rankings anymore. You're just like, that's the same. Let me see what I'm going to move this guy and this guy on the top of the men. Like, the women's rankings stay the same because nobody fights. Nobody fights. I mean, it's like, so I'm like coming up with blurbs, like giving updates of, you know, like where we're at, you know.
Why is
a couple
this?
Of them, I was like, you know, you're like, there were milk carton like entries where you're like, has anybody seen Cyborg or like Dakota DeChivy? Like, you're putting them on there because I'm like, they're just disappeared entirely, it seems like. Ben. Anyway, Ben, go ahead.
Yeah. What is happening?
They,
what the fuck
wanted,
is going
they
on?
They wanted your opinion.
Tell us what's going on, Ben.
There's just so little action and so little movement going on right now. And it does seem like just in general, it's a real doldrums right now for women's. Because it's just like, what's the biggest fight that you could get excited about in women's MMA isn't made. And it's Amanda Nunes and Kayla Harrison. And, you know, we had to put that one off because Kayla's neck surgery and everything. But it's just everything else. It just feels like. You can't let them be out of sight and out of mind for this long without there being some kind of consequence. Like, you need to get some action going, get some movement going. Because otherwise it's just like, you know, you don't want the fans to get used to a whole bunch of cards where we don't have any women's fights on them.
A lot of them are aging too, like Manon Fiorot, like, you know, if she's going to get another shot, you're like, dude, it's been a long time. Mm-hmm. You have Natalia Silva, who's been waiting and waiting to fight. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on. Like, if you look at those rankings, you'll see what I'm talking about. Like, all 10 of them, legit. You're like, I don't know what's happening with any of these right now. Now Blanchfield finally has a fight, though. Yeah. So there are a couple, like, maybe there's some movement now. I know Dakota has a fight now lined up for Long Island. So a little movement is starting to happen.
There you go. Anything else there, Jordan? Oh, Petey, I don't know anything about darts other than the walkouts are sick. They are. I'm going to be at MSG tonight. What do I need to know heading into this? Okay, right. So basically, you're right. It's a lot about the walkouts, and they'll make a big thing of that. But what you want to look out for is the 180. When they hit a 180, that's the triple 20. They have to hit it three times in a row. When they do that, lose your foot. Like, that is fucking crazy. You have to just, every time they do it, actually put a bet on every game, like $2, they're going to hit over collectively over 15. That way you're not pitting, you know what I mean? You're trying to see it. Like, you just want to hit the old 180. I'd also say the song that's most synonymous with it is, like, I think it's a Sandstorm song, and everyone just goes oi. When that song starts playing, get it going. And that's pretty much your whole night sorted. That is your whole fucking night.
It'd be fun to go to a live one of those, man.
It's the darts is magic, man. It's fucking.
Would you be trading on Littler? Let Littler
work. I'll be trading on Littler like forever.
Yeah, because I feel like he's dialed in.
I'll be trading that market for Littler.
Is he part of the Hearn dynasty? Like, is he?
Oh, yeah.
Managed by
they own. Okay. Matchroom owned.
That's
PDC.
What I thought. That's what I thought. That's what I thought. Okay. I pay only, you know, outsiders' attention here.
If you watch that Netflix documentary about Matchroom, it's very interesting because the guy who runs the darts thing is completely the opposite of Eddie. Like, very hides in the back, doesn't speak to anyone, and makes astronomical profits that Eddie can never hit.
That sounds like my kind of gig.
But Eddie's like so jealous of him. His dad's like, I love this guy. I love the darts guy. No fuss out of this guy. Makes us so much money. You, yappity yap, yap, yap. Make a bit of money. This guy, unbelievable. Fantastic stuff. That is all the super chats we have. We can see Ben has been checked out now for exactly 23 minutes, and we do not want to keep him any longer than this. He has an article to write about the new AI rankings, and we want to see it. The follow-up to his first article about the AI rankings, and I cannot wait to see it. Chuck, you've been fantastic. Ben, you've been fantastic. You're both beautiful, handsome men. Oscar Losef on the sound, thank you very much. Thank you for letting me put my fan down here in between my legs so it doesn't affect what's coming out of my mouth. And on air, Jordan, you are simply a blessing. Thank you all, crackheads. We will see you next week. Love you loads. Stay hydrated. Mwah.